This week is Parshas Tetzaveh. Parshas Tetzaveh can be found on page 464. Of course, Parshas Tetzaveh continues. You know, it's a partner parsha with Parshas Truma. A lot of people like to make a note that Parshas Tetzaveh doesn't have Moshe's name in it, but of course it doesn't have Moshe's name in it because it's just a continuation of all the instructions of Parshas Truma. It begins with the word Vi'ata, which appears a number of times, which is Moshe, right? So to say that Moshe doesn't appear in the Parsha, yes, by name he doesn't appear in the Parsha, but he's all over the Parsha. Mm-hmm. So that's why I don't make a big deal about that.
And the assumption is that he simply dictates, continuing to repeat the dictation of
the right. It is. It's meaning the Torah is in Truma and Tetzaveh has all of the instructions that God gives Moshe. So you don't have a pasuk of Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor because you had that at the beginning of Truma, and it's all God continuing to talk. So there's no reason to do that. Okay, it's similarly, by the way, why Moshe's name doesn't appear in most of the Book of Devarim, because it's all Moshe talking. So you know, you're not going to have Moshe's name in most of the Book of Devarim because it's all he's talking. Okay, so we have at the towards the beginning. If we have the first two psukim. V'atatetzaves b'nei Yisrael v'kuei lech Hashem and Zayis zach kasis l'maor la'alos ner tamid. The instruction to get the Shem and Zayis, which actually appears a couple other places in the Torah. It's also in Parshas Emor and the beginning of Parshas Baloscha, I think.
Yeah.
Okay. It's certainly Baloscha, maybe in Emor as well. Anyway, to get the Shem and Zayis. Anyway, so we're not getting looking into that. Next pasuk, be oel moed michutz laparocha sasher leidus yarocha so aron vano be'arvad boker lefnei Hashem. So in the oel moed outside the parochas, asher al haidus, which is on the testimony. In other words, it's the parochas which divides between where the Aron is, because the Eidus is referring to what's in the Aron, that's where Aron is going to do. So presumably this is giving us a placement of where the menorah is going to be. Of course, the Ksav HaKabbalah doesn't focus so much on that in his comment on the words Be'ohel Moed. Be'ohel Moed is trying to understand what is the meaning of the words Be'ohel Moed. So let's take a look. Targumun klos Mishkan Zimna. What's a Mishkan Zimna? It's a temporary mishkan. Upereshu oel akavua v'hamazuman latzibur. So actually, he says that what's the reason for zimna? Zimna doesn't mean time. You know, I wonder actually how they punctuate this. He says zimna mishkan zimna. He says kavua v'hamazuman latzibur. Mazuman means appointed, ready for the tzibur.
V'tirgamuhu.
Well, what's can you translate this word? Stiftzelt?
Stiftzelt is a tent.
A tent, okay. All right, so that's what he's saying. So in other words, it's a temporary abode. Okay. Well, the Rashi perish moed loshon va'ad ki'inyan v'no'adati l'cha v'no'adati shama. Now, what is Rashi, how does Rashi translate moed? It's referring to a place of gathering, right? Gathering. So they're looking at this in different ways. Rashi is translating moed in terms of gathering from the word. They're each taking the shoresh to be a different word. Rashi is saying moed is from lashon vaad, and he's saying moed is based on a time. Okay, and what's Rashi's explanation? Kemelach hakoveh makom vaad l'daber mavadav sham, like a place where it's a gathering place that like where a king would speak to his subjects. Oel shenis va'edu shehu baruchu, meaning hu brichu, Hashkadosh Baruch Hu Moshe Yisrael. That's Rashi. V'li nira bekavanas unklus. He says, I agree with unklus. Shetirge mishkan zimne shapirish moed al azman. That moed refers to time. Kamola osos ulamoadim. Just as we refer to a yantif as a moed, moed being a time. That's he says. That's my vote. One second.
Where I meet you on
Moadim. Okay, so you're using both translations. You're saying a tent where I meet you, that's Rashi, on Moadim is on times. So he's saying that there are two.
No, Moed in terms of the Moed of that we call, as we say, that any time Hashem, we come to a celebration, it's called the Moed.
Right, but it's a time. A time, correct. A time, yeah. Not a gathering. No, he's let's finish him up. Okay, let's get his point, because he's bringing two opinions as to what the shorish of the word moed is. Kamola osos and the targumol is zimnin. It's for specific times. Lefisha mishkan ramidbar lo aya rak binyan lefisha. Right, it was a building which only existed at a specific time. Ein stvelin des zelt. Now it's clear. Okay, shabin soa hamachane. Whenever they would travel, they would take the whole thing down. So because when they were traveling, it did not exist, so there was no place of meeting. It doesn't exist. It's something which is based on, it's only there for certain times. And the opposite is the Mikdash. Right? The Mishkan is something which is not there all the time, even because it's temporary. And it's portable. And the Mikdash is something which is forever. Shaya omid kama meos shanim. V'hu ha-shem ha-kasuv zos minuchasi ade'ad mechon l'shivtcha olamim. Right? The pasuk which says that this is where I'm going to rest forever. V'chein omru b'mechiltad Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai v'karlo ol moed yitzyahe be'zimna mizman l'zman karleim ol moed. Something which exists from time to time, that is an ohel moed, and so right? Okay, but the point is that he's presenting Unkelus versus Rashi, and he's siding with Unkelus. That's really all that it boils down to, and it's just a distinction. When we talk about a shul, for example, we talk about a mikdash ma'at because we hope for the mikdash, to last. We don't take it down and rebuild it.
It's a place where you come together.
Right. No, that was Rashi's opinion. Sazman Kunt is Rashi's opinion, because Rashi's saying that Moed is from the language of Vad, the gathering place. Look, the Ksava Kabbalah presents both. Okay, we move on. Okay, so immediately the Torah now goes into rules about the Kohanim in general, instructions about Asubig Dekodesh, Vyasisubig Dekodesh, Laron Achicha, the Chavod, Ulda Sifares, and then it goes in to describe what each of those are going to be. So let's take a look at the words of the Chavod and the Sifares. The clothing for the Kohanim are going to be for honor and glory. So the question is for honor and glory of whom? The Chavod El. Yisbarach, biyosam bigdei kodesh lavodaso. These are to honor God, ulatiferes, and for the glory, shiakoin more nora, kol svivav, shem tamidav, achakukim alibo, uchsefav. And I thought this was important, because he says that the Kohen is going to be a more nora. What is more nora? It's going to be an enamored kind of teacher, a kol svivav, for everybody around him, shem tamidav, achakukim alibo, uchsefav. For his students who are on his lathe and on his shoulders. What's on his lathe and on his shoulders?
What he's wearing.
So the Kohen Gadol specifically has on his lathe and on his shoulders the names of the Shvatim, both on the Choshen and on the Avnei Shoham, La'ifod, that are on the Ephod. And those are the Shmos Ben Israel. And actually, it's important to recall, one of the easiest sermons that I ever came up with is the one that has Vinasa Aharon as Shemos Bnei Israel al Libo or al Leva Aharon and al Shtei Chesefav. Take a look quickly at the top of page 468. V'samta Shtei Avanim al Kisvoso Eifod Avnei Zikaron Bnei Israel. There are remembrance about Bnei Israel. What Bnei Israel? The children of Israel? For all of Bnei Israel? Well, it's both. It's Bnei, it's like the sons of Israel, Yaakov's 12 sons, but it's also all Bnei Israel. And Aaron is carrying them on his shoulders. And we see the same kind of language when it's describing the Choshen. Where is it? Here, to turn the page to Pasuk Chavtes. Okay? The Chavtes and Lamed. Aaron carries the names of Bnei Israel on his heart. Next pasuk, they're on Aaron's heart. And the point, the sermon is, look what Aaron's carrying on his heart. What are you carrying on your, what are we carrying on our hearts? Okay, it's the easiest sermon in the world. And it's beautiful in the sense of the message. So he's saying here that the kavod is for God. That's why these clothes are so fancy and so nice. And this Tiferes is because a representative or a teacher of Israel should be glorified, in the sense that people should look up to him and should want to emulate or learn from, etc. Okay, and we just saw the pasuk of Avnei Zikaron regarding the stones that were on the shoulders. So Avnei Zikaron, he says, Havanim yaskiru es Aaron machshavto tamid es Bnei Israel. So I kind of hinted to that they're meant to be a reminder to Aaron about the Bnei Israel. And because he's always having Bnei Israel in mind, that will help him achieve the nevuah that he's supposed to have. Certainly in the case of Aaron, but really in the case of every kohen. Remember, every kohen is supposed to have some kind of connection, that whatever connection he's supposed to have, that the Urim and Tumim, the choshen that he's wearing, is meant to be a source of communication.
Any kohen gadol,
right? I'm saying any kohen gadol is so. I mean, the Torah here is talking about how Aaron is going to carry it, but Aaron is really the first Kohen Gadol, but what he's meant to be is the prototype, essentially, for what the Kohen Gadol is going to be. Al Shtech Sefav Zikaron, just to finish the commentary on the Pasuk, Perish Rashi Shei Roa Kadosh Baruch Hu Hashvatim Ksuvim Lefanav, not just that the Kohen should remember, but that God could see the names of the Shvatim written before him, V'yizkor Tziv Kasam, and he should remember their righteousness, but Rabbi Avad Yisfarno Kasav Zikaron, U'lasig Rachamim Al Yisrael B'zchusam, that God should have mercy on the Bnei Israel, the way we define the nation, in their merit, in the merit of the Shvatim. Lukaman, and later on, this is the pasuk which I just showed you, V'nasah Aron Alibo, etc., L'fnei Hashem Tamid, Kasav Rabbi Yavad Yisfarno, Sheizkar Hashem Yisfusam, V'yifkot Es Bneihem L'shlom Yisfusam, that Hashem should remember their merit, the merit of the sons of Yaakov, and He should redeem Bnei Israel for peace in their merit. V'hamem Beis, he always said that thing, I never know what it means. Kasav, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Not the mission of all.
I know it's not the mission. Definitely,
yeah, well, you said that last time.
I know. Yeah. Kasav Sam Alibal of Hashem, that he put it on his heart before God. Lispalel Alihem Avodaso. That's what Aaron had on his. He was literally carrying the Bnei Israel on his service. Who Yoter Nachon Al Derech Hapshat LaHarchik Es Hadvarim Amaskirim B'Misha Ein Shikchal Of Neki Say Kvado Yisbarach. Okay, and he says it's better to distance when you're defining the pshat here, to distance things that are remindering, that are as reminders before God. I mean, what kind of reminder does God need? That's exactly the point. The Ksav HaKabbalah is saying, the Sefarno says that it's meant to be a reminder to God. The Ksav HaKabbalah says, "Ein shikhal lefnei seich modecha." God doesn't need reminders. So who's the reminder for? It's for the Kohen Gadol. Why? Because the Kohen Gadol, bottom line, is human, and humans forget. Humans need reminders, and so he's in a sense he's arguing with the Sefarno, even as he presents it. Look, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. But I guess the point is that as a commentary, you have to make a choice, and when you make a choice, you know, you can go one way or the other, or you could say, you know, everyone needs to remind her. Okay, so that, I guess that could work too. But in each of these mefarshim is making a choice. Okay, now a lot of I really found, you know, just in the sense of fascinating stuff, whether it's mind blowing or not, the stuff about the choshen, and so that's why the next really 2.5 pages focus on the choshen and the urim v'tumim. So we're going to go through them in depth. To me it was eye opening and new in the sense that, you know, I hadn't seen this perspective before. So when we look on page 468, it's pasuk tes vav. So it's in the middle of describing what the different big day kohen are, the clothing of the kohen gadol. You have to make a choshen mishpat. So what is a choshen? So we know what the choshen is. The picture of the choshen is on the bottom of the page there, on the above the apron. And so the question is, so if it's a choshen, okay, choshen. Why is it called a choshen mishpat?
Justice.
What does mishpat mean? Mishpat means law, justice. I mean, it's a it would seem to imply that the choshen is something beyond just being an adornment. Take a look. Mishpat lashon birur devarim. I'm in the Ksav HaKabbalah, bottom paragraph on page 1. Mishpat lashon birur devarim shemfaresh mvarer devarav. Mishpat means something which is supposed to clarify information, that it explains whatever it's talking about. If he's that, maaseh achoshen stumim ki lo biyar mahim advarim shaladi achoshen mufurashim mufurarim. So he says the act of making the choshen is unclear because the Torah does not specify for us what are the devarim that through the choshen are going to be explained and clarified. Im heim inyanim mehabriya rishona. Right? Is it going to explain, theodicy or not theodicy? Not that theodicy is a different question. Is it going to explain the act of creation? Vehishtalshlus doros rishonim mikoros sehem and everything about the first generations and what they went through. Oh, heim tzivuyim v'azaros, or is it about commandments and warnings? Oh, tochachos v'kuchim v'diri limud chodameh, or is it going to be like a machlekes machine that's going to bring chakiras and give the different sides of different arguments? Well, kama and pasuk lamed, assuming that means lamed, not lamed dalad, pasuk lamed. So Rashi is going to explain in pasuk lamed, shehachoshen nikra mishpat al shem haurim v'atumim shayin nusunim b'cheflav. That the urim v'atumim is something according to Rashi which was placed in the fold, because the choshen, basically the choshen was like this. I'll put it this way. Okay, imagine this is the gold part which has the setting of the stones, and the bottom is a cloth which would be folded under like this, so that it would be a little softer against the Kohen Gadol, and that in between they would put something which Rashi says was called the Urim V'Tumim. Okay, what that was, Torah doesn't describe. Torah just says something about the Urim V'Tumim being there, and some say it was a piece of paper with God's name on it, whatever it was. Okay, that's the Rashi view, and the point is that it was placed in that fold. And things related to Israel were judged and proven through them. Right? Sometimes we see in the book of Shmuel, for example, they asked the Kohen Gadol, they asked the Urim V'Tumim, they asked the Choshen about something. Shaul says, "Should I go out to war?" David says, "Should I go out to war?" Things like that. And the answer comes yes, no. I think this also happens in the book of Yoshua, etc. Ulafiza pishnayim b'horas mishpat. So here we're getting two explanations of what the word mishpat means. Ha'echad lashon birur. One means clarification. Habei sidur asiyas davar minago. Kamo ma'iye mishpat hanar. In other words, it's basically a schedule. It's a schedule. No, I don't mean a schedule in terms of at 9 o'clock you do this, at 10 o'clock, but in that it defines for the Bnei Yisrael what things they are supposed to do. So one is clarification, and one is an order of what you're supposed to do. The Targumo, machaz lemevad lo lema. What are you supposed to do? Hine milas choshen tachshit keneged alev. He says the word choshen is a Rashi explains it as a jeweled kind of thing which goes opposite the heart. Rashbam pirish choshen can mean nartik v'kis, something which has a pocket. He says maybe choshen comes from what it actually does. The choshen's job is to check and to investigate regarding what the needs of Israel are. Ruach HaKodesh, turn the page. That the Kohen would see through the letters, which would, I'm not really sure how it would operate, but we like to think that they would light up, whatever that means. So he would figure out from there what these what the Choshen's message was. And then he would get he'd get the answer. That's one of the famous tales with Eli HaKohen regarding Chana, that he sees the letters Shin Chaf Rei Shei, and he thinks it means Shikora, and it really spells Kshera, that she's fine, that, you know, leave alone.
Because it was in Mukta Mamukha, in other words, it is up to you when you know it.
Right.
It's just like a crossword.
Yeah. Right, so you have to figure it out. But now look what he says. V'shem Choshen, u'behefech, atavan mishem Nachash. He says that the word Choshen is an opposite. Now, it's not a complete reversal, obviously, but it's jumbling. What is it? It's the nun is being thrown to the other side, to the other end. Okay, but targum nachesh nachesh, but come mivdek, right? Remember where that phrase comes? Yosef says regarding his cup, right, that it helps him do nichush.
Divine, helps him divine the future.
What?
He talks about what he does in the cup.
Right, which is divination, to know things. Okay? Ella shem nachesh yore ala b'dika ben yonechol v'divrei havelushtus. Says, what's the problem with the word nachesh? That it's referring to mundane things, secular items. The choshen is meant to do something which is of a holy nature. So now, if I were to ask you, now that you know that he's suggesting that the word choshen and nachesh are related, related. What would you say is the shorish of the word? It's not a trick question. No. Chetshin. Right?
Yeah. Like, because the nun is extra.
Right. Correct. You don't need that word. It's like, ani chash l'dvaro. Right?
Lachush.
Right, lachush. Right? Right, exactly. That's where the word comes from, okay? So he says, but when it's nachesh, then it's chol. Then it's divrei hevel shtus, stupidity. V'shem choshen, but when the nun is on the end, after the chetshin, Yore al havadika be'inyan ne kodesh. It's about checking about things which are kodesh. Okay? What? No, he's saying that the ches shin of the word nachesh, which means to do like a divination through some secular means, like Yosef when he's telling the brothers, when Yosef's the king, right? He's telling the brothers, I use the goblet to divine information. So that's nachesh. Okay? But a choshen, he says, is the opposite.
And today in Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, you talk about nachesh.
Right, okay.
To guess.
Okay. So hopefully we're not guessing when it comes to this kind of stuff. So he says, V'shem choshen yoral b'dika b'nyan ha-kodesh, l'avdil b'en ha-kodesh v'emes l'b'en ha-chol v'ha-sheker. So the choshen's job is to distinguish between kodesh, holiness, emes, truth, between and things which are chol, secular, mundane, and sheker. Hitil b'zeh ha-nun b'sofo li'os k'shem ha-tor. And so the nun goes at the end so that it should be kishem hatoar,
descriptive,
yeah, about, because the choshen is a noun, as opposed to nachesh, which is a verb, exactly. Uvezeh muvdal maaseh choshen b'urim v'tumim me'inyane shar hanavuos. And that's why the choshen is different, with the urim v'tumim is different. Ki anavi alarov ayomadiyah b'nevuoso dvarim bilti kadima she'elo u'bedika achareihem. When the Navi would give information, it would be, you know, nobody could check on him. Okay, and there's no prelude, premonition, anything. He just comes along and gives information. Or I should say, bilti kedimas she'ela, where nobody's even asking. Okay, whereas how would the choshen operate? You have to trigger it. You have to ask a question. Omnam hodas ha'choshen b'urim v'tumim lo yarak acharei shayim natzorech latzibur livdok l'shol. There was a communal need to ask a question. No saying mishpat katzar. See how he's using the word mishpat? The Kohen would make a small mishpat. What's a mishpat now? Not a judgment, but a
statement.
No, a statement.
The
Ela ha-mishpatim, right? It could be laws, but it could also be statements. Okay, mishpat katzar, uchuva. Correct.
Okay,
uchuva charutza b'dibur katzar, and they would get an answer with very I don't want precise.
Concise.
That's what I was looking for. Concise language. Asay olot asay. Do it or don't do it. Hinei yetam choshen mishpat tachshit sheicholim livdok lasik al dei biru davar shanu mesupakim bo in lasos asolim anami menu. That the choshen mishpat is something which would give us clarity through our asking, if we're in doubt as to what to do or what not to do. Skip the parenthesis. So what is the Ksav HaKabbalah? He said that Mishpat, it means a sentence which is delivered to the Choshen. He says, Unklus translates the word Mishpat to mean Din. Right? Law, Nir, Shemafar, Shal, Mishpatei Hashem, Torah. That the job of the Choshen is to address the laws of God. Im Haya Labesin Sfeika, Tadina, Hayu Yucholim, Lispar, Mishpatal, De Shelas, Urabatumim. If the Basin had a doubt, then they can clarify the Mishpat, or Mishpat meaning law, through asking the Urim V'Tumim. Uch, Moshkasa B'targum, Yonatam Aziel, Chosh Adina, right, the Beim Hoda Dinehon, Yisrael, Diskasim in Dinaya. So if a din was unclear, then that's how you would get the answer. Rechein Alpiv Yatsu, Alpiv Yavau, Targum Yonatam Aziel, okay, etc. So we get the idea of where he's going with this. And obviously, you know, in presenting the side that suggests that Mishpat is din, that was not the route which he went, and it actually makes so much sense the way that he does it. Just as far as we know from having learned the Ksav HaKabbalah, that he's going to go against the grain. You think that Chosha Mishpat, of course, it has something to do with law, and he says no, because it's not always law. Right? When David HaMelech says, "Should I go out to war or not?" That's not law. That's not a din. That's I'm giving a Mishpat to the Choshen. A sentence, a statement, and I'm looking for an answer. I talk about it's like what do we call it today? We call it Das Torah. Das Question. Das Question. Yeah. Yes, Rabbi Kozowski.
That's what I want to say. He's talking about it's a name for what he's doing, as opposed to
right, as opposed to what it does. Correct.
Itself.
Yeah. Okay. So I thought that was a
you
cool.
You would have no one lying saying. When you go into let's say you have a dispute with someone. You wouldn't lie. You can just ask the Chosha Mishpat because you have backup. You have
right.
A, that's okay. Pretty. I never heard that one before.
Right. Okay. So that's good. I like it. I like it.
It's a Choshen. That's good.
Okay. So let's move on. Urim V'Tumim. Urim V'Tumim.
The question is, what do they do then?
What is the Urim V'Tumim? So let's take a look at the pasuk first. Pasuk Lamed, okay? Because that's what's given to us at the end. So all this describes the Choshen, and all the psukim from the one that we just saw describes all the different stones which went into it, the chains, the borders, how it was all set, you know, jewelry-wise. And then we saw this pasuk before. We'll just look at it again. Pasuk Lamed, V'nasato el Choshen HaMishpat es ha'urim v'es ha'tumim. So note that it's not called the Urim V'tumim. It's called ha'urim with a hey and ha'tumim, okay? And it looks like they're two different things. Es ha'urim v'es ha'tumim v'hayu alev aharon b'vo oluf ne'ashem, and they will be on Aaron's heart and asaronus mishpat b'nei Yisrael. Now that has a totally different meaning, right, to us. Es mishpat b'nei Yisrael b'oluf ne'ashem tamid. Okay, so it's not about necessarily about judgment, but that he's going to be able to represent whatever the needs of the b'nei Yisrael are in light of what we just saw. So now the question is, what are the Urim V'Tumim? So we already know, he already told us what Rashi says about what the Urim V'Tumim are, that it's something which is placed in the fold between the Choshen and that cloth that was folded up, that it was something else. And I believe in Rashi's understanding, I mean, we can just take a quick look at it, but that Rashi presumes that thing has a shem on Mefurash on it. That the Shema Mefurash in there gave the Choshen power. Okay, now, I'm going to be a rationalist for a moment and say, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that? Meaning, does that have to be the only explanation of what Ha'urim V'Hatumim is?
No,
okay, if you believe that God is saying you're doing this the way that I wanted, does God really need the Shem HaMeforash there?
No, not at all.
No, rather you need the Shem HaMeforash to tell you that the thing is.
Do you? Do you?
You don't really do it, yeah.
Do you?
No.
Meaning, if the answer that's come through the Choshen is coming from the divine, you know, you're putting in something which is a talisman. You're almost gonna worship that piece of paper, yeah. Right?
But you're not, because Hashem is
okay. In a chinami, my point is that there can be another way.
Okay.
To look at what the Urim V'Tumim is. That's the point.
Maybe it's a conduit.
All right. So let's take a look. Okay, so Huksav Shem HaMeforash, Vayinos No B'Soch Kiflei HaChoshen. That's Rashi. Hey, v'chein pirush kol mafarshim. That's the way all the mafarshim view it. Ramban and Yinavur Yoter. And the Ramban, it goes into even greater detail than the other mafarshim. V'harbe t'mahati. Shalom atzasi b'divere Rambam klum. It says, I got a major problem. Because guess what? The Rambam doesn't say anything about this. Okay? Ki perktas miklei mikdashim v'orsham kol pirtei ma'asei choshim v'eifot. V'lois kir klal mi'um v'tumim. Now, you remember how I said a second ago, is there another way to look at it? Right? I'm not going to get into all rational and everything, but Rambam was, by and large, a rationalist. And so, if the Rambam was not talking about it, Echi Shemet Mikra Mefurash. Says, how could he ignore something which is a Mikra Mefurash?
Explicit.
Yeah, it's a straight pasuk. You're going to put it in there. L'chein Yirali. So now the Ksav HaKabbalah is going to explain how he understands the Rambam. L'chein Yirali Deledato Ein Urim V'tumim Shemos Kedoshim Kedasim Farshim. He says the Urim V'tumim, according to the Rambam, is not referring to God's holy name, Shem Mefurash. Rak Shneim Hasar Avanim Shayiksuvim Shmo Shneim Hasar Shivtei Yisrael. It's the 12 names that are on the Choshen. In the Heit Matzam Krona Kasuv Kan B'Shem Urim V'tumim. The Urim V'tumim equals the words which spell out the names of the Shvatim, the letters basically which are on the stones. Kehem Atzmav. Excuse me. Hayu Me'irim Utumimim B'divrehem B'blitas Osi Osehem El Nishabahem. What's Urim V'tumim?
Or
what lightens up? The letter. And what's Tumim? Tumim means what?
Stones that remain dark.
No, see, he says it comes from the word tamim.
Pure?
I wouldn't say tamim means pure, but straightforward and simple and complete, or whatever, that it just gives the answer that you need, in the way that the letters would give across the message to the person who asked. Newly owed, and if lazos, but chuvas anishal. He says, and aside from milavad l'sibas pulos, aside from the way that they operate in giving away the answer, they're also urim v'tumim. Why? Ki gam mitzad atzmusam yitachein alihem shem zeh. That just even without giving the answer, they would have this name. Ki avanim tovos ke'ele mitivam liozach bahir meir. But you know how some precious stones, they just reflect light. So they naturally have light in them. L'chein nikru urim, ratzalomar balei or, they're reflective of light. Gam avinu eilu nukachu l'choshin, kibriyusan hativ'i, lo shalat alihen yad ha-chotzvim ha-poslim, kemashkatsuv Ramban. And these stones were in their natural form. They were not, reshaped or whatever. Sh'avnei ha-choshin nikru avnei miluim detagumo avnei shleimusa. They were complete stones. In other words, they were selected because of their perfection without having to be manipulated by man. So they didn't change from what they were naturally. It wasn't done through a craftsman. Basically, they would make an outline on the stone, and they put this shamir, this kind of worm, which was able to do whatever it was supposed to do, and it would go along the lines, and it would make it. When he talks about this elsewhere, he talks about how the letters were embossed. Right? You know what's the difference between emboss and engrave? Emboss is when the letters stick up. Engrave is when you dig into the carve it in. So what was on the choshen? Which one, embossed or engraved?
Engraved.
So that's not his view. I didn't give it to you, but I have it here. One second, I'll tell you exactly where it is because I wrote it. Ufitachto alihen milas patach yore alaksiva haboletes. It was embossed. That's what he says. It was sticking out. Okay, that's what he says. So, I'm not getting into proof now, but that was the point which he says. Bolate means sticking out, right? That's clear. Anyway, they were complete. I'm sorry, I went back too far. I'm on the sixth line from the bottom. In the middle of the line. Says they are complete without a flaw, because they were in their natural form, and that's why they were selected. In other words, I don't remember the names of the stones in English, but you know, let's say you needed a Shoham stone, so you take a Shoham stone, so that you know people could say, I have a Shoham stone. All right, well, they come in different forms. Well, let's take the one that fits into the Choshen the most perfectly. But it's tamim, and that's what tumim means according to the way he's saying this. Vinei, the mashpir is Rashi amileis bo miluas even shemilui avanim begumos hamishpatzos. So Rashi says that miluos is referring to filling it. I'm not. Yeah, I'm not sure what that means, but it's referring to some form of how the craftsmanship was done. Okay, imkain, skip the parentheses. Imkain chaser dain chibur mishpatzos ha'ele l'choshen. It's not clear what the mishpatzos connected to the choshen are. Alzeh markam v'nasatol l'choshen esorim v'esatumim. She says this is what you're going to put to the choshen, the urim and the tumim. Klamar techaber mishpatzos avanim el choshen mesolmar el arigas chatichas beged hamruba. He said, now this gets into a whole different understanding of what the craftsmanship of the choshen is in fact.
Oh, this is in the clothing. I've actually seen an
artistic rendition like this, which is different than what you see here. I mean, here, like the art scroll, for example, they have a picture where it's actually no. You know what? They're not doing that. Come to think of it.
Page
470. So, you know, they make these stones look perfect, but that design, which is behind the stones, is actually that's a cloth. Okay, that's not gold. When we think about the Choshen, sometimes we think about how it's gold settings and the stones are emplaced in there. So what he's saying, what they're demonstrating here, is that these stones are actually attached to cloth. And that's the cloth that gets folded on. And why do you need to have the folded cloth? Because the stones, exactly, they're not, like, if they were smooth stones, and if they're a setting, then it wouldn't be a problem. Right? You could just put it in there, it's fine. But the fact of the matter is that they were rough around the edges. They were, I mean, I don't want to say jagged, but they weren't smooth. That's the point that he's trying to make.
He's saying that it was just a piece of material to protect the wearer.
Right, the wearer. But also because it's made out of material, the stones would have to be sewn into the material. In a way that's how the setting would work.
So what are you saying? If you're saying that he wasn't going to drill four holes or whatever number of holes,
right? So now the question is, when we read the Choshen, so take a look. Pasuk Tezvav, just for a second, just to hold off for a second. V'yasisa Choshen mishpat maaseh choshev. Make a breastplate of judgment of a woven design, like craftsmanship that we should make it, of gold, turquoise, purple, and scarlet wool. What's the gold? Is it solid gold or is it golden thread?
Gold.
That's fascinating to consider because I never looked at it that way. Okay? But it doesn't seem that the Choshen itself is actually made out of gold.
No, it was the beged around it. I mean, that was just right?
No, take a look. Pasuk 22.
Okay.
Okay? Breastplate, you shall make chains at the edges of braided craftsmanship of pure gold. The chains are pure gold. Breastplate, you shall make two rings of gold. You shall place the two rings on the two ends of the breastplate, two golden ropes, two ends of the two ropes you're going to tie in the rings, shoulder straps, two rings of gold, that's it.
The Choshen is not made out of gold, folks.
It has golden thread. That's what it seems like it has. But it's not golden settings. So that I mean, that's pshat, by the way. That's not even, that shouldn't be a chiddush to us, but if we're just tainted by drawings, then.
What did it have in Indiana Jones? Indiana Jones had what was he wearing?
That's a real mucker there.
No,
that's Steven Spielberg. Don't insult Steven Spielberg for his masterpiece against the Nazis. Yeah, but the Choshen and Indiana Jones, I don't know that is a good depiction. Anyway, no, it was gold. I don't remember. We can all do Chazara after the class. Begamim nefarish milas bo shechazer alachoshen klamari shemalas choshen avanim shtiana zo itzel zo bo ofen shiach choshen mulei avanim that, you know, that the word bow should describe how the stones need to be actually in the choshen, so that the choshen is filled with stones. That you're going to put to the choshen the urim and the tumim. Through telling us that there is the urim and the tumim, it's essentially describing to us their amazing pulos, right? The what they in fact do. The amar. So now we're skipping again the parenthesis. V'amar es ha'urim, v'es ha'tumim, b'chefel milas es. So we have the word es in front of the word urim, and in front of the urim, and in front of the word tumim, rather. En yizeh hora al inyonim nifradim. That's not depicting to us separate things. Higam be'etzem echad mitzanu kaful. Because there are other situations where we're going to find in one entity that it's described in two different ways. Es bincha, es yichidecha, or es yichidecha. Right, that's the way Yitzchak is described to Avram. Same guy, same kid, or you know, however old Yitzchak is. The Leos Shadibra Kasuv Adhena Miyud Beis Avanim Shemitavam Leos Bali Or Mitzuchzach. And since up until now the pasuk talked about 12 stones who are naturally going to have or light coming through them. Vikor Am Avnei Miluim. They're also called. You know, I guess I don't know what miluim means in this filling stones. I'm not sure. L'haros al shleimu son, to demonstrate for us perfection, their completeness. Kibriya son, bilti yischas ruklum, that there's nothing missing from the way that they are in nature. L'chein tal b'hem idea haurim hatumim. They are the stones which are light, which meaning that give light, and which are perfect. Kamatzanu hey, also the letter hey. L'haros al chi dubar mimenu biasid. The hay is also making it into something for the future. Ki bimei habriya amar es yom hashishi, yom hashvi'i, the fisha yuz karu biatid, the way that they should always be referring to aichal gives yom hashvi'i vaikadesh oso, ki vosh vas mikom altam, yom hashishi v'yachinu al yetza yish mikomo biyom hashvi'i. Okay, so one is the sixth day, and in the future, nobody should go out on the seventh day, on Shabbos. Kacha b'avnei achoshen, sh'asid l'daber mehen, k'moshe amah, k'moshe kasuv, v'sha'al lo, b'mishpat ha'urim, that he's going to ask in the future, with a sentence, or for the law, from the stones which give light. L'chein ho'sif b'hen kan ha'hei, because it's referring to something in the future, that's why the hay is added. So the Torah distinguishes between the stones which are on the shoulders, as we noted earlier, of the ephod, and the stones which are in the of the urim v'atumim, because ephod, the ephod amar l'shon sima, you're going to place the shtei havanim al kisvos ephod, you're going to place them on the shoulders. V'chanamar v'nasata, that you're going to put. Okay, and it's two different meanings. El hachoshen es haurim. Ki lashon sima yore yoter ala kavius milashon nesina. In other words, the visamta, that is something which is permanent. Right. In other words, there was a setting.
Why
and
this you read it as el?
What?
Read that sentence again. Below the line below the end of the page.
Ki lashon sima
visamta se
amav nasa. Vesamta shtei avanim al kisvos ha'efod. Your vesamta, that's the key word there. That you're going to place. Mm-hmm. Place meaning in a setting.
V'kanam
avanasata el hachoshen es ha'urim. So I wouldn't.
Why not el? Why not al?
That's the point. That's the point. In other words, that's the difference between the word the sima and the nesina.
Yeah.
Okay, and he's going to explain. Kilashon sima yore yoter al kavius milashon netina. Sima samach yud mem is something which is much more permanent than nesina. When I put something there, right? If I place it as a sima, then it's done. It's there for a much longer time. V'nirayim kain she'avni evod ayim mechuberim bekavia. The stones that were on the ephod were attached permanently. Omnam, here's the answer hopefully to your question, Rabbi Krasavsky. Avnei ha'urim ve'atumim lo ayu mechubarim ba'arigas hachoshen chibur tmidi Ad shiasu shneim beguf echad ki im chibur talui. It was held up by some strings, but it wasn't in there permanently. Kishnei gufim nifradim zemizeh bechad talui bechaveiro. It's like two separate entities, but one is attached to the other, but clearly not put together. I mean, I'll just give lahavdil. Okay, think about jewelry. Think about a diamond ring. Okay, can you get that diamond out of the ring without breaking the ring if you're not a jeweler?
No.
Okay, no, you can't. That's a setting. Okay, so those things, they become one. But if I have, I don't know what a good example would be, but if I have, you know, what would be a good example of something which is tied on, but it's removable? I don't know.
A necklace charm
that's removable. Mm-hmm. Okay, perhaps something which is removable. The point is not that they should slip out, but now we can understand a lot better the story with Dama ben Asina. Remember the story in Kiddushin with Dama ben Asina, the one who was the Chachamim were looking for a stone for the Choshen,
mm-hmm,
because it had gotten lost. How does it get out of a setting? The answer is, it wasn't in a setting. There was a string attaching it. It was woven on, but you know it gets loose over time, and so that's how it got lost, and that's why it's only one stone, because that's the one that got lost. So that's the point that he's making here, and just skip to the part where it's about a little more than halfway down. Cain nearly, you see where there's a sentence, this is the middle of the line. Cain nearly be Yishuv Dasa Rambam.
Mm-hmm.
You see that?
Yep.
So he says that now I understand. Now I think I understand what the Rambam is saying. She Shmit b'Maaseh Echoshen Inyan Ha'urim Atumim, that the Rambam didn't mention the Urim Atum at all. That it wasn't something which was added. Why? Ki Acharei Shebir Sham Kviyah Shnei Masar Avanim Echoshen. Once he described the placement of the 12 stones in the Choshen, Sulo Tzarich Laskir Odu Urim V'Tumim Kehem B'Yatzmam Yud Be'ez V'Avanim. Because the Urim V'Tumim refers to the stones.
He's saying the Rambam understood that.
He's saying that's the way the Rambam must have understood it. Lashon Rambam Atzmo Muchach Shekore Yud Be'ez V'Avanim B'Shem Urim V'Tumim. That's what he does. We could look it up. He says B'Perek Yud Mekleh Mekdash Halacha Yud Kasav Asu. See, he says the Urim V'Tumim is one of the eight garments. Okay, etc., etc. So you get the point that he's trying to raise here, which is that the Urim V'Tumim equals the stones of the Choshen. The Choshen is the woven material, and the stones are the Urim V'Tumim. That's the point that he makes here. Okay?
Which is so interesting.
Okay, yeah. I mean, look, it's not mind blowing stuff, but it's just, you know, it's fascinating.
I agree.
Fascinating. Okay. Vinishma kolo. Let me just see what I have here. Oh, okay. So let's take a look at this. I know that I noted this. Vinishma kolo. So let's take a look at the pasuk. Ah, right. This is referring to, okay. So the meal is a cloak made out of tcheles. It was this blue thing which had bells on the bottom. Bells and pomegranates. Pamon rimon. Okay, that's pasuk lamadala. Pamon zav rimon. Al shulei amil saviv. They have like a little picture of it on the bottom, page 472, showing you the pamon rimon. V'hayol Aharon l'shareis. So it's on Aharon to when he serves. V'nishma kolo b'vo oil hakodesh l'fnei Hashem v'tzeisel v'lo yamus. So you should have the it on his garment when he goes to the kodesh. And when he goes out, veloyimus, and not die. Okay, so all right. Let's see what he says. I don't remember if I gave you the part which I really liked, but anyway. Okay, Kasav Ramban. Al dati ubiyor lemitzvah sepamonim. Kibut neshayim b'hem tzarach b'luvit shvein derech anichmadim le'asos lehem kain. Chena mar kitziva b'hem babur sheishmak lo b'vo el kodesh v'kanes lefnei adonav ki ilu brishus. And basically, what Aaron, he's saying, what's the point of the bell? The bells to make an announcement that he's coming. And this way, his master, who's the master, God, you know, it's as if he's getting permission. I have your bells, like you told me, so now I can come in. Right, you can't come into the king without being announced. That's the way the Ramban explains it. Okay. And he says what he's saying comes from the rabbis, which doesn't follow pshat. He says to me, the mitzvah of the bells is just like the mitzvah of tzitzis. Shama mitzvah hi lemaskeres al mitzvos aydei chush hariya. What do we say? Reisem oso uzachartem is called mitzvos Hashem v'asisem oso. You're supposed to see the tzitzis, remember the mitzvos, and do them. Right? Could I say reisem oso uzachartem? V'chana mitzvah hi lemaskeres al mitzvos aydei chush ha shmiya. The other one is using the sense of sight. This is using the sense of
hearing.
The Kohen Gadol has a lot more to be thinking about and a lot more to be reminded about. He has an additional reminder that attacks, I don't mean in a negative way attacks, but attacks his hearing, added on top of what's supposed to trigger. What triggers this? It's triggered by hearing. Added on top of the one which is triggered by sight. When he hears the sound of the bells, which are in the Me'il, so that would remind him, oh, why am I wearing these bells? I'm wearing them before God. Who commanded me to wear them? God. Why am I the only one wearing these bells? It's just basically meant to be a reminder to him of who he is and what his job is. Whenever he's wearing these things, they'll be reminded. He is the chosen one of the Jewish people. And that he has a position that, you know, he could in his mind, if he wants to be somebody who's not such a frumi or whatever, how on earth can you do that? If that's the case, then don't take this position. But the point is that this is a reminder to you that you must live to a higher standard. And he stands always before God. And he should not take his mind away from this for a moment. And if you're concerned that there's a prohibition of getting benefit from the big dekuna when he's not doing this avoda, and we could say that hearing the bells is to remind him about the sanctity of his clothing. They're not just for his service when he's going to the Kodesh. And so it's a reminder to him that you got to take them off when you're leaving so that you don't do mi'ila on their kedusha. It's not about others hearing, as we have in the Megillah Esther, that the Pisgam HaMelech is supposed to be heard by everybody else. That gets into a grammar thing, but the point is that he says that who needs to hear it? The Kohen Gadol needs to hear it. One of the things which he actually says here, which I think I took out, was that there are some who said that the Kohen Gadol would wear this Bevo'el HaKodesh when he would go into the Kodesh HaKodeshim. The Ksav HaKabbalah says, that's ridiculous. Why?
Because there's not supposed to be any sound in there.
No. Because what's he wearing when he goes to the Kodesh
HaKodesh?
Well,
he's
not wearing these clothes. So he says, I don't know how anybody could think that that's what it means. Right? It's not referring to when he's going into the Kodesh HaKodesh Yom Kippur, because he's not wearing that when he goes to the Kodesh HaKodesh Yom Kippur.
Yeah, this is great. This is really good.
Okay. All right, good. So, you know what? Just, because we're limited on time, hopefully you'll have a chance to go through the stuff which is on in Lamed Gimel and Lamed Tes. I want to conclude with the last one, because it does address an important question, and different commentaries address it, some ignore it. But the question is, if you look on page 482, which is the very end of the Parsha, you find something which is extremely out of place, and that is the Mizbeach HaKetores. What's the Mizbeach HaKetores? That's the golden altar on which is burned the spices. Okay. Now, where was this thing placed in the Mishkan? Near the Shulchan and the Menorah. It was in the Mishkan itself. opposite the ark, right? The shulchan is on one side, the menorah is on the other side, and then a little closer to the entrance was this small mizbeach, which is made out of wood and covered with gold, just like the shulchan is made out of wood and covered with gold, just like the aron is made out of wood and covered with gold. These are things which belong inside the mishkan. So where is the proper placement of this kli ha-mishkan, this kli of the mishkan? It should have been described to us in Parshas Truma, along with its roommates, right? Mm-hmm. Right, along with the shulchan and the menorah. So what is it doing here? What is it doing here? That's the question. Okay, so that's what we're going to look at. We don't need to look at the psukim. The pasuk says, "V'asisa mizbeach mikdak Torah, atzei shitima ta'aseh oso." Okay, you're going to make this this mizbeach for burning the ketores out of wood, and it's going to be covered with gold, etc. V'asisa mizbeach. Okay, tzarek tam. Oh, we're just looking at the last page here. I just looked at the pasuk. It's page 482, first pasuk in Perek Lamed, first pasuk in Shvi. But we don't need the pasuk. The question is for that vessel, for the vessel of the Mishkan. Okay, it's on the last page of the parsha. V'yasisa mizbeach. Tzarech tam, we need to understand the reason. Al shelo nichtava parsha Perek Zu, or parsha Zu, l'ma'ala, tov shar kelim. Why isn't this thing about the mizbeach hazahav, the golden mizbeach, being explained to us here? Why isn't it explained rather in Parshas Truma? Why is it here? Makom Aro, leave Parshas Mizbeach alone. It should be next to talking about the other Mizbeach, or B'shulchan HaMenorah, Shein Smuchim Bach Mechad, right? As I said a minute ago, next to its roommates, the Shulchan and the Menorah, the things which are in the Mishkan itself. V'yamar Rabbi Yabad Yisforno, it's Forno says, Ki lo yisa kavan abo lahashkina el yisbarach b'sochenu, kemo sha'inyan b'shar kelim. He says, the intent with this was not about bringing God's presence amongst us. The concept of v'shachanti b'socham, that I'm going to dwell amongst them, that God is going to dwell amongst all of these kelim, gam lo hoya inyano lohorid mare kodo b'vayis kinyan ma'ase akarbonos k'amro b'no'arati shamal b'nei Israel. What is the main function of the Mishkan, folks? What's the main function of the Mishkan?
Place for God to dwell.
To do what? What's the main
Karbonos,
action?
Sacrifice.
Karbonos. Which Mizbeach?
The big one. It's outside.
The big one.
The big one. The outside Mizbeach.
Right.
Okay? Is the purpose of the Mishkan for Ketores or is it for Karbonos?
Karbonos.
It's for Karbonos. Okay? What else is Tamid every single day?
The
menorah is every day. Right? The Shulchan always has bread on it. What about the Ketores? Now, yes, there's Ketores which has to be done in a Chinami. But is that what's meant to bring the Shekhinah?
Okay.
So he's arguing that.
Yes.
No. No, he's arguing that. No.
Isn't the Ketores only done when there's a carbon?
Let's take a look. Okay. Let's take a look. Okay. And this is Moshe Rabbeinu himself. See that acronym?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Moshe says, "Zeh davar asher ta'asu v'yera aleichem kivod Hashem." What is that referring to? Where is that? It's not about Torah, is it?
No, it's a mizbeach.
Right, it's about the mizbeach. Okay. Aval haya inyan zeh mizbeach lechabed esayel yisparach acharei ba'o lekabel baratzon avodas amo b'karbonas sevoka be'arv u'shacher panav minchas ketores. Okay, so the shacher panav.
The
yes, I'm not sure what that means, but in other words, he's saying that the main avoda of the karbanos, boker v'erev, is one thing, and the ketores is something else. Al derech habu l'Hashem kavod shemo su'u mincha uvo'u lefanav. Okay, that you have to bring things to Hashem for His kavod, and then there's a mincha. Okay, so in other words, what's priority number one? Karbanos. What's the afterthought?
The Ketores.
Ve'agramar, kilo huzkar ba'asiyas klei mishkan, ki hizir tchila ala mishkan v'chilav abagadim u'krei v'sar ala mizbeach. Because first it tells us about the kelim of the mishkan. It's not mentioned with the other kelim of the mishkan, because first it tells us about the mishkan itself, and its specific kelim, and the clothing, and Aaron's being brought to the mizbeach. Ve'achakach amar asiyas hatamid, and afterwards it mentions the tamid. Now what's the tamid? The tamid is referring to the carbon tamid, which is an animal. So what's this? And afterwards, it mentions the Mizbeach HaKtoros in the case of Kippurim Yoreh, Shezeh lo yema'akei l'ashras HaShekhinah. Okay, that's the point that I was mentioning before. That this is not a preventative to God's presence being present in the Mishkan. Rak elu hayu l'kaparas Yisrael. This is for atonement. Okay, v'chein amar b'kesef HaKippurim, l'kaper anashras HaShekhinah. So what's the difference? There are two things that we want to have here. We want HaShras HaShekhinah. How does HaShras HaShekhinah come? The Aron carries HaShras HaShekhinah. Menorah Shulchan, so I'm not really sure where that fits in, because he's not really explaining. And the Mizbeach makes God's presence known. But what's the point of the Ketores? It's supposed to bring about atonement. Kapara. And what's the proof? V'haram Chagiz Amar, Shir Moz Lanu B'zeh, Din Shinishtama Mizbeach Zomi Mizbeach Olah. How is this Mizbeach different from the other Mizbeach? Mizbeach Allah in Ein Mizbeach, in Ein Mizbeach, in Makrivit Karbon. If you don't have that Mizbeach, you can't bring a Karbon. Vafilu Nivgam Kis Bezvachim, even if it's there but it's ruined, you can't bring it. Av Mizbeach HaKtoros Shenakar, Maktirin Kos Mekomo, She'ein Mizbeach Ma'akev. If there's no Mizbeach HaKtoros, you could just make a little fire on the floor and do it in the same spot, but you don't need the Mizbeach HaKtoros, not Ma'akev. Okay, she knows about Ma'akev. B'chach perish Rambam, B'chach pasak Rambam. L'zeh lo nechnal parshazu im ha'acheros. Okay, in other words, his point is that this mizbeach is really not Ma'akev. You don't need it. You don't need it. It's nice. It's beautiful. It's good, but you don't need it. So why is it called mizbeach?
You bring something on it.
Take a look at the next one. Shem mizbeach unach al shem azvachim shemakrivim alav. Mizbeach is for something which has zvachim on it. Okay, Omen Amuzak, see, lo talu alav olo mincha v'nesach v'enim yuchad rak l'kdoris. The only thing that's supposed to be burned on here is k'doris. Mikol makam al shahayu mechaprin alav v'matan damim in apar v'asayir shal yom ha-kiburim. Because the blood of the goat and the bull from Yom Kippur were sprinkled on here in the Avodas Yom Kippur, nikra gam kein mizbeach.
Just 1 second, so... That was sprinkled on the Mizbeach that brought the Ketores on. So that blood went on that. It didn't go on the regular Mizbeach.
No. The extras were poured on the outside
the
of the Mizbeach.
The outside.
Yeah, you have to look back at Parsha Zakharmos and, of course, look at the Mishnayos and Yuma, which describe it. But when the Kohen Gadol would come out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim after having sprinkled the blood on, you know, in front of the Aron, and then he comes out and he sprinkles it onto the Parochas, he went from to the Parochas to the Mizbeach HaKtoros, and he would sprinkle it onto the Mizbeach HaKtoros. So he says that that's the reason why it's called a Mizbeach, because one time a year they'd sprinkle blood from a Zevach on there, and that's where it brings it. But otherwise, what is it? It's a thing of Kippurim, it's a thing of atonement. And that's the purpose. So again, the main thrust, I would say, of his argument and why it's mentioned afterwards is because it's not about HaShras HaShekhinah. Everything else, because it's not even needed for HaShras HaShekhinah. The Mishkan without the other items is not, I'm not even going to say it's not a Mishkan, because we know the Aron is missing for the second Beis HaMikdash. Okay? But we essentially, what makes the HaShras HaShekhinah is the big Mizbeach.
Right.
Now, I don't really understand how that answers for the menorah and for the shulchan, that's a different question, which he's clearly not addressing here. Yeah. But his point is that it's separate from everything else because it's not me'akev in terms of for the mishkan. It doesn't prevent HaShras HaShekhinah because you can do I'll put it this way: if you don't have a menorah, you're not lighting candlesticks. You're putting. If you don't have a shulchan, you're not putting the shulchan on there. If you don't have this mizbeach, you can still burn the ketores. So that I guess would be the distinction.
Perfect.
Okay.
So,
All right. Go ahead.